Hello and welcome to Pharmalex Talks podcast with my interview MDR expert Jean Boudot. Today we are going to be discussing what led to the regulation, how it differs from the Medical Devices Directive, and key considerations for implementation. Jean is Director and Head of Medical Devices, IVD, Australia at Pharmalex, and a mechanical and production engineer by training with an extensive background in quality and regulatory affairs in the medical devices industry. Welcome and thank you for taking part in today's podcast.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Okay, so let's begin by looking briefly at what led the European Commission to introduce the MDR.
So this was really about catching up with technological developments and providing greater safety nets and controls on medical devices. The Medical Device Directive, which the MDR replaces, dates back from the 1990s and before the main advances in certain medical technologies and software. So when you've got regulations that are over 20 years old, requirements become very interpretative for those new technologies. Another aspect was that device safety also became a major priority, and that's because the confidence in regulatory systems became under pressure after serious problems occurred with products in the market. That was the case with breast implants and hips replacements, for example.
Let's talk about a few of the key differences between MDR and MDD and why these are important to medical devices manufacturers.
Absolutely. So implications for manufacturers are quite significant, but I can touch on the key points. Maybe first is just the fact that the MDR is four times the size of MDD, which really reflects that level of detail that the regulators have introduced. A lot of that is down to the fact that they merged two of the three most relevant EU directives, one being for the general medical devices and the other for active implantable medical devices. The third category, in vitro diagnostics, remains a separate regulation under the IVDR. So to be more specific, there are much stronger references to product safety and risk management. In fact, the word safety appears almost 300 times in MDR. So really, MDR brought fewer interpretative definitions and more detailed requirements, particularly around product safety and performance, but also on post-market surveillance requirements. Maybe another key difference is that there's more responsibilities for economic operators. And by this, I mean manufacturers, importers, distributors, and the EU authorized representative. So many companies may not have sufficient processes in place to interact with these key stakeholders. And that's because these economic operators have added responsibilities such as verifying the conformity of the products supplied, cooperating with the authorities, and keeping additional records around traceability, complaints handling, and so on. In addition to this, there's also now some specific competency and experience requirements for the EU authorized representative, which actually made it manufacturers to change their EU representative. And really what we find is while companies may have thought about their quality system, they sometimes forget about their contractual arrangements with these parties.
These are definitely some standout differences. Are there issues around reclassification that companies perhaps need to think about?
Yes, you're absolutely right. So companies need to be aware of the fact that some products have been reclassified and some products are covered under the regulation for the first time. So for example, certain aesthetic devices, such as contact lenses that would change the eye of the color of your eyes, are now incorporated even though there's no medical purpose. But from a safety point of view, they still present risks that require some form of compliance with MDR. Healthcare informatics is another key example. Software has increasingly become a device in its own right and not just an adjunct to a medical device, as was mostly the case 20 years ago. And those software medical devices now have their own classification rules in Europe. So, of course, for companies that were either never covered by the medical device regulations or those that inherently fell in that low risk category, this creates some significant implications. There are also reclassifications with joint replacement devices being the perfect example, and that triggers additional regulatory oversight, and this means more documentation, more reviews, and greater assessment by the notified bodies.
Okay. And from your perspective, what is the greatest documentation difference that MDR introduces?
So probably the most significant changes in MDR are the requirements around clinical documentation and post-market surveillance. These are more detailed and that involves more planning. Manufacturers need to create a document flow which starts with risk management plan, and then depending on their product classification, the regulation will require establishment of a clinical evaluation plan followed by a post-market surveillance plan and a post-market clinical follow-up plan. So even with low-risk products, the documentation requirements are much greater than in the past in these areas. As you can see, there's a stronger focus on planning activities and not just the execution of those activities. So companies now need to describe what information they'll collect to demonstrate that their product continues to be safe and effective, but also detail how they will collect this information. So in essence, the MDR means companies need to adopt what I'd call a total product lifecycle approach. So they not only really safe and effective products, but also have clear plans to continuously monitor what's happening once their product is on the market. Of course, there's many other changes that will impact medical device companies, but these are probably the most complex issues we're facing. Perhaps further thing to bring up is the additional responsibility of notified bodies. But for now, it's just worth mentioning that product conformity assessments are longer, sometimes more painful and more extensive as well.
That's very comprehensive. Thank you, Jean. Let's talk a bit now about the operational component to MDR, which is the European Database for Medical Devices, or EUDAMED.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So EUDAMED is a very important component of the MDR implementation. I'd say the first point to note is that EUDAMED is an entirely new system for Europe, and that's because there was no database of this nature under the old MDD. Now, one of the challenges that everybody faced was that when the regulation went into force, the database was not yet available, which meant that companies could not comply with that aspect of the regulation. Today, of the six interconnected modules within EUDAMED, three are available. And just recently, the EU Commission has released their target timelines for implementation. And so it's expected that the database will be fully released by Q4 of 2022, although this may be a little bit optimistic based on prior experience. But then the database will be subject to an independent audit, which results will be presented to the Medical Devices Coordination Group, or the MDCG. And from there will be a progressive enforcement of the use of all modules until Q2 of 2025. So until the database is fully functional, its use is voluntary. But I strongly recommend manufacturers to start using all available modules, as that's usually requested by notified bodies, but also the EU local representatives. One key aspect of EUDAMED is that part of the product information will now be accessible to the public, so consumers can access safety and efficacy information about a device. And all of this is very much about improving the transparency and sharing information between all interested parties, which was one of the key priorities for the regulators as part of this MDR implementation. Another way to note is that the EUDAMED database will be used to trace unique device identifiers, which helps with the post-market surveillance aspects. of device safety. So that's something else that's entirely new to Europe, although UDIs have been in place in other regions for quite some time. And this also means that manufacturers, of course, have to implement this unique device identification system for their products based on the class of the device and based on their use scenarios.
Let's talk briefly about some of the key transition timelines that are important to the industry.
Yes, Elizabeth. And that's been quite confusing with timelines being pushed a few times, in part due to COVID-19. I'd say there are three key dates for companies to consider. The first one is May 2022, when any MDD certificate issued before the 27th of May 2017 will expire. The second date to remember is May 2024, when all MDD certificates will expire and products must be MDR compliant. And the third is May 2025, when essentially devices certified MDD can no longer be sold or distributed.
These are really key dates for companies to be aware of.
That's right. And another thing to note is while companies are in this transition, they basically can't make any significant change to their products, and all QMS requirements must be implemented for their devices, including the arrangements with the economic operators and the post-market surveillance systems. So companies must remember that even if their MDD certificate is still valid, they're expected to implement the QMS elements of the MDR.
That's very helpful and insightful. Perhaps we can wrap up with today's podcast with some key advice for companies when transitioning to MDR.
Yes, of course. And here we can really draw up on our own experience since we've been ahead of the curve with MDR. So we were fortunate to participate in training from the very early implementation phases, not only hearing from the notified bodies around their concerns and perspectives, but also conveying our own experience of many technologies and working together to figure out the best approach for implementation. So with that in mind, I'll suggest a couple steps. So firstly, get educated on MDR. So if you've read the document, listened to podcasts and webinars, attended some good quality training, you're already off to a good start. Next, you really want to conduct a gap analysis. Now, there's two key considerations here. There's the product technical file that many people do pay attention to, but the QMS assessment sometimes, in our experience, is left out. But that's also, of course, a major part of the regulation, so make sure you follow through here. After the gap analysis, start addressing those gaps. That will involve generally revising your SOPs and updating your technical files. And usually, the transition impacts the technical file summary, the structure, the creation of a general safety and performance requirements, or so-called GSPR checklist, updates to the product labeling, including the UDI, the declarations of conformity to MDR, and of course, the clinical evidence and the post-market plans and reports we mentioned previously. A fourth step is to make sure you engage with your notified body early and effectively plan your transition so you don't fall behind. There's a lot of requirements in MDR and about six times fewer notified bodies to conduct that conformity assessment. So make sure you get in the queue, especially if you don't already have a contract in place with a notified body, as you may not be prioritized for the review. Then fifth, stay up to date. It's fair to say we are still in a relatively early adoption phase. Notified bodies are going through a learning process and also are under a certain level of scrutiny. Industry is gaining experience, and the Commission is also finalizing implementation. That's the case with UDAMED, and also through the development of new guidance documents. So in time, a lot of new information will be published, and it's really important to make sure that you keep on top of those learnings.
Thanks, Jean, for joining me today and sharing your insights with everyone. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another into your business. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us again. If there are any topics you would like us to cover on Formalex Talks podcast, please feel free to drop me an email at elizabeth.hunt@formalex.com. Thank you.